The House Committee is convened. Let the record show that the meeting has been called to order at about 3 minutes after 3. And also that Representative Keller, Representative Fairclough, Representative Gardner, Representative Seaton, and myself, Representative Wilson, are present, and we have a quorum to conduct business. So, first of all, I'd like to recognize some of our staff. Debbie Tillinghast is our House Recording Secretary. Sammy Baker is our LIO monitor. And my committee aide is Becky Rooney. So before we start, please turn off your cell phones, totally off, not even to vibrate, because they do affect the working of our machines over here. So if you can turn your cell phones off and then try to remember to turn them on when you go back out the door. Anyway, we have two bills on our agenda today, and they are House Bill 337, the Healthcare Transparency Act, and House Bill 345, the Medical Facilities Certificate of Need. As you may remember, House Bill 337 addresses three different areas, and they're the new Healthcare Commission, the Healthcare Information Office charged with disseminating health information to the general public, and Certificate of Need. And last week we heard the two first parts of that bill, and today we are going to hear testimony just on CON. And I said last week that we would start off with testimony, and that's just what we're going to do. We're going to start with the testimony on the CON. And so when you start giving your testimony, please state your name and your affiliation, and then whether you're for or against it, and then you can kind of go into your testimony. Representative Cisna has now joined us. And I do not plan to move either bill today. We are going to hear testimony. And in order to get as many people today to be able to testify, we're going to give everyone 3 minutes to speak. So when your 3 minutes are up, we'll have a timer, and when that timer goes off, you have 10 more seconds to wrap up. And if you don't do that, you will just get cut off. So think about doing that. And if somebody else before you has already stated what you, one of the items that you wanted to say, something about, just say I agree with the previous speaker, and then go on into the other items that you have, and that will help a lot. But we're going to try to make sure that everyone gets heard today. So we will now proceed to public testimony. And do I have the sheets for people online? First of all, are there any members? Okay. What I will do is, if there are members in the audience that cannot get back here to testify at another time, raise your hands. And if you haven't testified before, we will hear you today. But I'm going to go online first of all, so be thinking of what you might want to share. All right. We're going to go online. And first of all is Kay Bias. Kay, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead and give us your testimony, stating your name and affiliation.
Thank you. My name is Kay Bias, and I'm the Alaska State Representative on the Radiology Business Managers Medicare Advisory Committee. I support Representative Kelly's bill as a fair and equitable alternative to the present CON. One of the biggest problems with the present CON is that it does not define a physician office. In today's world, many physicians partner with hospitals and are recognized as physician offices, and as such can purchase imaging equipment without a CON, unless they're a radiologist. The commissioner has decided that radiologists should not be given the status of physician office based on a ruling by Judge Stein Kruger, in which the imaging facility in question was truly not a physician office due to the ownership structure. 10% radiologists and 90% private investors, not healthcare providers, as well as not meeting other necessary criteria. This imaging center clearly did not meet Medicare guidelines in any way, yet because the judge used the term like facility, the commissioner decided this ruling would be the litmus test for all imaging facilities and has not bothered to compare the Medicare guidelines for a radiologist physician office to the other imaging centers to see if they truly are like facilities. She would see a vast difference. HB 345 clearly offers a solution to the restraint of trade that the commissioner has imposed on radiologists and also protects the smaller communities from huge for-profit conglomerates taking away revenue streams. Thank you for your time, and I urge you to support HB 345.
Thank you very much. And I don't see anyone with questions, so thanks, Kay. Next, we're going to go to Hawaii. Jeff Cook, are you on line?
Yes, Madam Chairman, committee members. My name is Jeff Cook, and I'm president of the Greater Fairbanks Community Hospital Foundation Board. I'm here to speak against 337 provisions and in favor of those in Representative Kelly's and Kawasaki's bill. I was born in Fairbanks in the old St. Joseph's Hospital, a predecessor to the Fairbanks Memorial Hospital. It was 40 years ago in 1968 that the Greater Fairbanks Community Hospital Foundation was formed. The Sisters of Providence had announced that they would close the hospital the year before. More than once, city and borough voters turned down voter propositions for the local governments to own and operate Old St. Joseph's Hospital. But a far-sighted group of community members formed the hospital foundation and raised money to open the new Fairbanks Memorial Hospital in 1972. That main tower has now expanded to over 500,000 square feet of acute care, long-term care, and special care facilities. And these facilities are owned by the foundation and operated by Banner Health, and any community member can join our foundation for $25 a year. And let me make it clear that I do speak not only for myself, but our 25-member board, and it's an all-volunteer board for the hospital foundation. We are in opposition to anything that would eliminate or drastically alter the CON, and that's why we speak in favor of the bill of 345. I'll let you know, Fairbanks Memorial Hospital is open 24 hours a day. We provide acute care, long-term care, emergency services, psychiatric care, care for chronic inebriates. We treat cancer and heart patients, and we provide diabetic care and also home health care. We take all patients, in regardless of their ability to pay or the type of insurance. We provide charity care to a high level. We recruit doctors, whether to practice at the hospital on their own or to join another Fairbanks practice. It would only be fair to eliminate CON if those who want to offer ambulatory care and other highly profitable services would also offer 24-hour services to all patients in need, regardless of ability to pay. Fairbanks is an isolated community, and it is important to have a wide range of medical services available for Interior Alaska residents. We built a cancer center before we could justify it financially because it was the right thing to do, and we did the same for our heart center, cath lab, which is just opened, and we've saved lives and money and provided comfort and convenience to over 100 patients just since December when that cath lab opened. If we are to continue to offer the best care possible to FMH, we need to retain all services, not just the unprofitable and the inconvenient services. Conclusion. We oppose the elimination of the CON and support HB 345. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jeff. What's the weather like there?
Yeah, it's about 83 and sunny. And
that's enough. That's enough. Right. Okay, thank you very much. Okay, Joni Withrow. Joni, are you online? Joni. Kevin Dorsey. Are they muted?
No.
Okay. Christine Scott?
Yes.
Christine, we can barely hear you. Can you talk up a little bit?
Can you hear me better?
Much better.
Well, I can't really say much about what an office is or not, and I can't really say if FMH got a good commercial in there for free or not. But what I can say is that I'm a patient at the Advanced Medical Centers of Alaska, and FMH does not allow all doctors in the Fairbanks area to use their medical facility, and my doctor is one of those. So I have to go to Anchorage to have medical procedures done because we don't have an outpatient surgery center in Fairbanks. And therefore, I have to fly down to Anchorage, have the procedure, and then with bandages and an implant, trial implant in my back, fly back to Anchorage after waiting, or fly back to Fairbanks after waiting for 4.5 hours at the Anchorage airport to come back home. So I'm thinking that having an outpatient surgery center in Fairbanks would not only benefit patients here, but we really wouldn't be doing anything to cause a problem for FMH because we wouldn't be taking any business away from them because we don't go there anyway. So I'm saying that I think that we should eliminate the con regulations and see if we can get some good old-fashioned capitalism going here. Thank you.
Thank you, Christine. Ann Matthews?
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, good. Thank you. I am very much in favor of the governor's plan and this bill. I was having trouble with my heart, and I went to the hospital emergency room. I received a bill for $5,000 for one visit to the hospital. This should shock just about anybody listening. I'm still vibrating from that bill. I don't know how I'm going to pay for this bill. I think that that's a pretty amazing bill for one visit to the hospital. I wasn't there for all that long, and I'm going to be evaluating this bill with the hospital, and I can't, the hospital who says that they're a nonprofit, they are a for-profit hospital. They net $25 to $35 million each year, and I think people ought to look at this pretty closely. So I do support the governor's plan. I do know that this con limits our choices and our variety and our access to medical care while increasing our costs. It certainly has increased my costs. And so I ask everybody to support the Senate Bill 245 and the House Bill 337. And I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much, Ann.
Okay.
Had 13 seconds left. Rod Perdue.
Thank you. My name is Rod Perdue, and I've worked at Fairbanks Memorial Hospital for about the last 5 years. And I just want to talk quickly to 2 points from a little bit different perspective. I've had the fortune to, thanks to my military service, live in quite a few communities around the country and a few around the world. And I just want to speak from the aspect of looking at it from the community standpoint and how the strength of this hospital in our community benefits us, and particularly in two areas. One, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Golden Heart Project, but the collaborative effort of a number of agencies here in the interior, to include the State Department of Health and Social Services, the Alaska Mental Health Trust, the hospital, FNA, law enforcement, both the police department and the Department of Corrections, the Fairbanks Community Behavioral Health Center, and Chief Andrew Isaac have gotten together and have worked, and it was spearheaded by the hospital. The strength of the hospital allowed this project to continue. We'll be breaking ground on a behavioral health enhanced detox center here in just a couple of months, and less than 1 year from now, that facility will be online. And again, thanks to the strength of the hospital, that project was able to come to fruition. Not unlike 3 years ago when we worked on the project for the outpatient diabetes center. There was a need in the community. The hospital stepped up again, spearheaded that effort, and now today we have a diabetes center that is benefiting the community greatly. And again, I've lived in a lot of places, and one of the things that drew my family to decide to stay here in the interior was the strength of the community. And the cornerstone in this community for many of the things that happen is the hospital. Again, it's community-owned, community-based, and keeping it a strong, viable entity is very essential to the health and the well-being of the community overall. And thank you.
Okay, thanks, Rod. And I tried to get to people that were saying that they couldn't stay very long. I think we have some people in. How long do the doctors have off before they have their next meeting? Is there a time frame at all for the doctors here in the audience? Okay. All right. All righty. Then we will continue. Let's see if we can go somewhere else, but looks like almost everybody is from Fairbanks. Mark Ackley?
Yes, Madam Chair. I'm here. Can you hear me?
We sure can.
Great. My name is Mark Ackley, and I'm the Chief Executive Officer of Imaging Associates of Providence. I'd like to thank the governor and members of the legislature and everyone today taking part in these hearings. I'm here today in full support of HB 345. I recognize that HB 345 is not a global fix for CON reform, but it protects those vulnerable smaller communities who cannot withstand the pressure of new competition that results from uncontrolled growth. This bill encourages a competitive, consumer-driven healthcare environment that affords everyone a choice and better access to improved medical services. I think this is a smart bill that blends both a competitive and controlled growth strategy that will benefit both business and patients who are entitled to a choice in their healthcare decisions. And equally important, this bill provides clear guidelines for new medical businesses to develop with confidence of sustainability. And let me give you an example of how this will help. IAP is a business that has been twice been given the green light by the state to provide diagnostic imaging and procedural services to the Anchorage and Wasilla communities. Shortly thereafter, the state reversed its decision, jeopardizing these important diagnostic services we offer, as well as jeopardizing the livelihoods of 19 employees. Had clear definitions for CON exemptions been in place from the beginning, IAP and the state could have avoided the current quagmire that's expected to cost several hundred thousand dollars in legal fees alone. So thank you for giving me the opportunity to testify today, and I urge you to support HB 345. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mark. Okay, Kevin Dorsey. Kevin Dorsey?
I think his name is pronounced Dory.
Oh, Kevin Dory? He's off, okay. Dr. Mike McNamara? Dr. Robert Bridges.
Dr. McNamara is still here.
Okay, well, I have him come up to the mic.
Madam Chair, committee members?
Yes.
Yeah, this is Dr. McNamara. Is it my appropriate time to talk?
It sure is.
Thank you. I tried to visit you all in Fairbanks, or down in Juneau, with a snowstorm and didn't get a chance to testify, so I'm going to try this again.
Okay.
For the record, I'm Dr. Mike McNamara. I'm an orthopedic hand surgeon here in Anchorage. I'm a president of a four-member advisory group that represents 26 limited surgeons, limited partner surgeons of the Alaska Surgical Center here in Anchorage. The center does about 5,500 cases a year. We have 55 surgeons that operate here, and about 16 specialties are represented. About 20% of our cases represent Medicare, Medicaid, VA, TRICARE, and Project Access, which is basically free care for underserved. My reason for testifying is really to oppose the repealing of the CON. I do, however, support the Kelly bill as a compromise. I offer four comments. One, please remember that the original purpose of the CON in Alaska was to prevent excessive and unnecessary duplication of development. Secondly, in Anchorage, the primary surgical centers include Alaska Regional, Providence, Alaska Surgical Center, and Alaska Spine. These centers are rarely full capacity. In fact, I think our center may be one of the busiest, and it's only 55 to 60% capacity of this past year. So we're fortunate in Anchorage to have these surgical centers of excellence, as I call them. We have some of the best surgeons, some of the best nursing and support staff, probably even in the country. Our community benefits from this, as do your families. Allowing additional surgical facilities to develop when these present centers are not capacity would certainly reduce other things like peer oversight, which happens in large centers where we can be sure that other surgeons are doing the right things and are appropriate. And when we split out into smaller mom-and-pop centers, as I've heard the term phrased, we really may change the standards of care that we have. Third, there is a national shortage of OR nursing, and all of these centers are understaffed, including ours, including the hospitals. Removing the CON may create an undue competition for these valuable OR staff and skilled nursing, where there's already a critical shortage. Competition will not lower costs, but will create greater costs and overhead while we're competing for these limited resources. Lastly, the larger centers, as they exist, have power to negotiate, and I've been a part of this for the last 6 years, with insurance companies and the unions allowing reduced costs to the public. Unchecked development would likely reduce the negotiating power of these centers, and additional centers would just drive the price upward. I know you've heard arguments both ways, but we really see it up here that that's the case. Madam Chair and members of the committee, I would urge you not to repeal the CON. Do not risk losing the awesome center of excellence we now have here, especially in Anchorage, that's working well. You all remember as well as I do that wasn't that long ago we had to send people out of Alaska for specialty care, like Mayo Clinic, Seattle, and other centers. Well, we don't do that much any longer. We have very good surgeons here, very good medical care, and we need to keep that. I would urge you not to repeal the CON and to consider the Kelly bill as a compromise. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Right on time. Dr. Robert Bridges.
Hello.
We can hear you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Dr. Robert Bridges. I'm representing Aurora Diagnostic Imaging, my private practice. Also, I'm one of the original WAMI medical students in the 1970s. I'm in for the House Bill 337 repeal, but I also understand that there are some good points to the House Bill 345 that must be considered. As a private practitioner and from my position with an Alaska Open Imaging Center, I have supported the repeal of the certificate need since the beginning. The reason the present system it doesn't function properly and it hinders rather than helps improve medical care delivery. I really believe the CON has stagnated bringing new medical practices to the state, and it does not address quality of care nor quality assurance for that care for the patients and for the people of the state. The one thing that has really been a problem is the lack of explicit definitions. And I believe that HB 345 does address some of those needs for definitions of what a practice really is. Now, I take care of patients. I take care of people who charity work, Medicare, Medi-Cal, Medicare and Medicaid type patients. And so I don't work 24/7, but then again, most outpatient facilities and doctors in outpatient practice don't practice 24/7, but we provide needed care for the communities. There are many emergency procedures which I'm uniquely qualified to perform in the state, and I'm having difficulty getting the equipment online because of restrictions from the certificate of need. And this is a problem that's going to impact my patients and the patient care in the state. There has to be more than just one way to provide medical care in the state, and I think diversity is needed. When we put all our eggs in one basket, we basically lose the chance of having different approaches, different ideas, and progress. For this reason, I believe the CON must go away, and at least we must have new fine definitions to provide better guidance for how to, you know, figure out which is important things for selection to go ahead on in the way of medical business. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Having seen no questions, we'll go on, except that I do want to mention for the record that Representative Roses joined us a few minutes ago. Dr. Teslow. Oh, and I think he said he only wanted to listen, so sorry about that. Mike Prax.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mike Prax. My address for the record is 1015 Meadow Rue, North Pole. And I would like to address the, or I would like to advocate repealing the Certificate of Need program. I would eliminate the Health Care Commission along with it, as long as you're doing it, because I think that the Certificate of Need program is based on three false premises. One, that anyone should override our individual right to partake of or provide medical services. Two, that anyone can override our individual right to partake of or provide specific medical services, and that anyone has enough information to make a potential life or death decision for me. It's interesting, the word is more accurate than the acronym in this case. Certificate of Need, abbreviated CON, pronounced CON. CON is correct. It is a con on the public. The bill is really a protectionist measure for certain facilities, certain providers, who then make a lot of money in the market, and it excludes others who are willing to provide the service. And it is also a con in that, as an example, the hospital is said that they are providing a cancer center before there really is a need. So if this Certificate of Need program was truly operating, you would make the decision that it isn't economic to operate a cancer center in Fairbanks, and you wouldn't have issued it in the first place. So focus on the word con, because that's what it is. And then I made the point that you can't override individual medical decisions. Personally, we've had three occasions that we could have, and we took a look at the services available in Fairbanks. I don't want to disparage the practitioners or the hospital. I'm sure they're doing a good job, trying hard. But the fact is, the market up here was small enough, and the services were so much better and less expensive in the lower 48 that we decided on those occasions to actually fly out of Fairbanks to get the services, because we felt much better, more confident, and we got them at about maybe two-thirds of the cost. So if there was a Certificate of Need program really truly operating, even the hospital would have far fewer services. It is up to the market to provide those. You cannot override individual decisions on health care, and you simply don't have, nobody has enough information to make those life or death decisions for an individual. It can and should be repealed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Jim Lynch.
Madam Chairman and committee, thank you for your time. Jim Lynch, 327 Leanne Drive, Fairbanks, speaking to you from the room here in Fairbanks. I'll try to be brief today. I've testified on this subject before. I am an employee of Fairbanks Memorial Hospital. I've lived in Fairbanks area since 1969. In short, I agree with everything that Dr. McNamara said. And to reference back to 10 days ago in your reading of the bill, I want to refer back to some of Representative Kelly's comments because I think they deserve mention here in this setting. And although I appreciate always Kelly's colorful remarks, I wanted to take a couple of those a little further. He used a reference about this issue being sometimes hospitals versus docs. And I think it's important for all of us involved in this difficult issue to recognize that that division isn't really accurate. We have certainly mixed messages here, and you have physicians falling on both sides of this issue, so I just want to clarify that division. Also, in regards to competition, I think many of us involved in this issue have the unfortunate habit of referring to the CON as something that limits competition or, in fact, eliminates it. I do not think that can be further from the truth. I think with other key government oversight, which we as Alaskans sometimes are by our nature opposed to, this is a necessary foundation that provides the ground rules for competition that creates a sustainable and lasting infrastructure for healthcare in Alaska. So I wanted to make those couple of points. I believe that Dr. McNamara hit on everything else I had on my list, so I thank you for your time today.
Thank you very much. And I really appreciate that everyone is really trying to keep within that three-minute period of time. We're really doing very well. Marty Olone.
Hello, Madam Chairman, committee members. For the record, my name is Marty Olone. I live at 3825 Ridgeview Drive here in Fairbanks. I came with a list of items, you know, touching on some things. I am an employee at Fairbanks, but I want to speak a little bit more about something that one of the previous people testified about. And, you know, aside from the fact that I think the loss of CON would inflict tremendous hardships in a rural community of our size, and we've seen it happen before. I was admitted to the ICU via the ER after two trips to ER after a severe allergic reaction to something I ate. And my bill was probably in the vicinity of, $35,000, maybe $4,000. I spent a night in ICU, had the best possible care. But I'm alive, thank you. Thanks to that. And I guess if you have to put a price on it, if the hospital needs a CON and it provides valuable things as well as 24-hour care and a state-of-the-art emergency room, I think that's what we need. So I am against House Bill 337, and I support House Bill 345 for the record. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Just a second, Marty. Representative Seaton has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess it's a question that hope you can answer, and maybe it should have been to Dr. McNamara. But I'm hearing this support for 345, which basically exempts the diagnostic imaging centers that, you know, if there's certain other conditions met. Under what aspect should we do this for imaging but not for ambulatory surgery? What can you distinguish that for me as to why this should not, the same concept shouldn't be applied to the ambulatory surgery centers as well as to imaging centers?
I believe that when you're classifying the radiologic aspect, I think you're putting the parameters in the House Bill 345. I don't know if we've gotten all those parameters down as far as surgery centers and other places that have potential to take off things like arthroscopies, day surgeries, and things like that.
Thank
you. Follow-up, Representative Seaton.
Well, a little bit, but, Madam Chair, maybe if some other people, as they're testifying, if they are supporting 345 and not 337, maybe they can distinguish for us why they are supporting elimination of the certificate of need for the diagnostic centers, but not not eliminating it, but drawing it back, but not supporting that for the surgery centers in these same, I mean, in those same markets that we're talking about. Thank you.
All right. Mary, hopefully that you heard what the question that Representative Seaton has asked, and so that you can make comments on that. Why don't we do for the surgery centers the same as we're looking at doing for the imaging centers? Next is Mary Barney Satley.
Yes, Madam Chair and Committee. This is Mary Barney Satley from Fairbanks. I'm a patient. I'm also a citizen of Fairbanks, and I care. And I love the hospital. They are fantastic. But I do feel that one of the questions I have is when we have pain doctors in the community that would like to be credentialed at the hospital and take their patients there rather than referring them down to Anchorage, why can't that take place? Because I think that's really, I'm thinking of the patient. And so that is my question. Thank you, and I support the House Bill 337.
Okay, thank you very much. Mari, is that how you say your name?
That's correct.
Okay, Mari, that's a real good question, and hopefully somebody will answer that as we go along.
Thank you.
Robert Gold?
Hi, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Robert Gould. I'm the Chief Financial Officer and Head of Operations at Fairbanks Memorial Hospital. I'm here today to speak against House Bill 337 and in favor of House Bill 345. Before I get into my testimony, I'm going to spend a little bit of time about costs and charges and the differences in a competitive market versus those in Fairbanks. But I want to address the question, because it's been asked a couple times, about the physicians that aren't able to provide service in Fairbanks. It is correct that for a period of time that we had our pain services under an exclusive agreement. Since that time, that is no longer the case. Approximately 6 months ago, that contract was modified, the exclusive arrangement was modified, and the pain physicians that are in Fairbanks have been invited, again, somewhere around 6 months ago, maybe longer, to apply for privileges so that they could perform the surgeries that they're taking to Anchorage. At this point, I'm not aware that any of those physicians have applied for privileges at Fairbanks Memorial Hospital. So to move into my testimony, I want to speak a little bit about the difference and why certificate of need is such a valuable tool, and why competition is not going to reduce healthcare prices. I want to start with imaging prices. For years, you've been listening to various versions of this bill, and for years, you heard people say that if we were able to come into Fairbanks, we would lower the price of services to the patients of Fairbanks. Since that time, two MRIs have opened in Fairbanks, and a third is about to open in Fairbanks. We took the three most common procedures for MRI in Fairbanks, and currently one of the MRIs outside of Fairbanks Memorial charges 17% more. The other charges 32% more. That's on a spine lumbar without contrast. On a spine lumbar with contrast, they're 17% higher. The other imaging center does not provide this service. The brain MRI is 4% higher at one of the services and 28% higher at the other. They said they would come in and lower prices to the consumer. They didn't. When we look at surgery costs, Anchorage is by far the most competitive market in Alaska. And with all due respect to my our peer hospitals in Anchorage, one of the reasons that the pricing is higher in Anchorage is because of the competition. You just heard one of the members of a surgery center say that they have about 47% excess capacity. I think they said they're running at 53% of capacity. If you add additional services, it will increase the cost to the consumer. Right now, a cataract at one of the major surgery centers in Anchorage compared to Fairbanks Memorial Hospital, again, these are the most common outpatient procedures. Cataract, 26% higher than Fairbanks Memorial. Knee, arthroscopic knee, 29% higher. Carpal tunnel, 106% higher. Tubal ligation, 65% higher. Tonsillectomy, 22% higher. On a gross charge basis in Anchorage, the difference between the hospitals and Fairbanks Memorial Hospital, one hospital, 46% higher than Fairbanks Memorial. Another hospital, 129% higher than Fairbanks Memorial Hospital. Another hospital, 33% higher than Fairbanks Memorial Hospital. You have this data available, and I've mentioned this when we were talking about House Bill 337 and the transparency portion of this, and I urge you to go take a look at the Medicaid data that's available to the state. We've been asking this for years. You have a wealth of information at your fingertips to be able to go out and analyze and look and see what's happening amongst the different providers in this state. Fairbanks Memorial Hospital.
Rob,
yes.
Your time is up. I gave you a little extra because you answered that question at the beginning. But can you just close real quickly?
Sure. So I guess my point is that competition is not going to lower the cost of health care, and I support House Bill 345 at this point.
Okay. Thank you very much. Don't go away. We have some questions. Representative Faircloth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could you speak to the issue that the justice system brought up to us regarding the antitrust issues surrounding certificate of needs?
I guess I didn't hear that portion of the testimony. I'm sorry.
It was brought up to us the first time we heard the entire bill, I believe, back in January. And the Department of Justice, if I recall the correct department, came and testified and said that there was concern throughout the nation with certificate of need programs being challenged at a court level and being in violation of antitrust laws. Do you have a response to that?
I do not. I leave that to the state and the legal department at the state to answer.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was just wondering if he had those figures in writing, if he could send those to the committee so we could have, instead of just trying to write down.
Yeah, sure. No, I understand that. And we've supplied these in the past, and we'd be happy to supply them again.
Okay, thank you very much. And one more question from Representative Keller.
The fact that I think you're saying that competition raises the prices because of overbuilding, I guess. There's got to be a reason for that, being a capitalist and believing that competition out there ultimately leads to lower prices. That's not an intuitive statement. Do you have some idea of one or two factors of why the numbers you provided us there would be true? I mean, there must be something that is not obvious.
Yeah. Well, I think, again, I know there'll be a number of others that will testify about this bill that will bring facts into play, but some of the things, as you already heard, are that a hospital is required to take all patients regardless. Let me take that back. A not-for-profit hospital is required to take all patients regardless of their ability to pay. If you operate an emergency room, you're also required to take all patients regardless of their ability to pay. The difficulty is what you're going to do, what you're going to see is you're going to see the individual facilities carve out and take an 8-to-5 business, which I'd love to be able to operate from 8 to 5, and I guarantee I could lower our price if we only had to operate from 8 to 5. But what happens is they start pulling the profitable services away from the hospitals, and in order to provide inpatient care, which is not profitable, emergency care, which is not profitable, home health, which is not profitable, diabetes, which is not profitable, and the list goes on and on of the services that are not profitable, we have to then increase our prices. So they're allowed to increase their prices. It's a non-ending situation where both will continue to escalate their prices. As well, when you overbuild, both, when you're putting millions and millions of dollars into capital enhancements, you've got to get your money back or you're going to close your door. And the only way to do that is to increase your prices to your consumer. So as there's fewer consumers, because there's more providers, you're going to slowly erode what each one has, and each one is going to increase their pricing.
Okay, thank you. Seeing no more questions, we'll go on to Scott Bell.
Hi, my name is Scott Bell. I live in Fairbanks, and I'm a volunteer with the Greater Fairbanks Community Hospital Foundation. I guess I am in support of the CON bill, so I am against House Bill 337, and looking at HB 345 as a reasonable compromise. For many of the reasons that Dr. McNamara expressed and then Rob Gould just mentioned, I think the CON does a great job of building a strong healthcare infrastructure in a community such as Fairbanks, which is a rural community. The hospital uses profits from the few profitable areas to build and provide services to many other areas and access to other areas which just are not self-supporting. For that reason, I support the CON rules and hope they can stay in place. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Kevin Dorsey?
Yes, hello? Hello?
Yes, we hear you.
Hi, I would first like to begin by answering Representative Keller's question about competition. The reason that the prices are increased in the short term for competition is that the CON system has been in place for so long and created such a dearth of competition that initially it will increase the price. But we have such a long hole to dig ourselves out of that, you know, essentially the best thing to do is to eliminate CON and to begin the long, slow process of reconstruction and allowing the economy to catch up to essentially the rest of the world. Now, I would like to begin my main testimony by saying that, first of all, I'm a citizen of Fairbanks, and I'm also a student of economics. And I would like to say that the CON is anti-competitive. Fairbanks Memorial Hospital is one of the richest hospitals in the country. It makes an incredible profit every year, and the average patient cost is $6,000 per day. That's before insurance, and insurance doesn't necessarily cover a lot of that. As we go into our recession here, it's going to be a big, big problem when people don't have the ability to pay and the housing crunch catches up with them. I would also like to say that CON impairs and prevents physician recruitment. Essentially, we are driving away. We lack a lot of specializations that would be present in Fairbanks because doctors are leaving. Alaska loses a net 5 to 6 doctors every year. That's recorded fact. I mean, we're not gaining any net new doctors, and CON is one of the sources of that. I would also like to respond to this constant insinuation that Fairbanks is a rural community, it's an outpost, it's isolated. Fairbanks has undergone massive, rapid growth. Anyone who's looked at North Fairbanks can see this. We have shopping malls, all kinds of chain stores, and the gas pipeline is coming. If we find ourselves with the gas pipeline coming, with CON still in place, there's going to be a massive, major medical emergency when the operating room or the hospital, which just has a few operating rooms in Fairbanks, is not able to cope with the massive growth. Fairbanks is going to turn into a major industrial city soon. And I think that the gas pipeline and the growth that it's experiencing by itself is leading to that. So for all of the issues that it's anti-competitive, it's a source of corruption. It prevents physician recruitment, and it will lead to a dearth of care when Fairbanks is, you know, growing largely and we're losing doctors constantly. I urge to remove CON and support House Bill 337.
Hang on a second. Representative Gardner has a question.
Yes, thank you very much for your testimony and for waiting on hold. Can you elaborate a little bit about your statement that having a CON in place is responsible for a net loss of doctors and also that it interferes or prevents physician recruitment?
Essentially, doctors who come to Alaska have one of two choices. they either do non-surgical, non-intensive work, or they work for the hospital on the hospital's terms. It's basically a one-horse show. And many doctors have felt discouraged by this. Many doctors have felt like they don't want to work with the hospital's coercive terms, and they don't want to work in a system where they have no basis of comparison for what kind of contracts they want to work with, what kind of healthcare situations and systems they want to work with. And when the hospital basically says, you either fulfill the terms of this contract or there's nowhere else for you to go in town, many doctors already, you know, who might not necessarily think of Alaska as the most burgeoning medical market in the world might say, well, that's enough to tip the balance in sort of my accounting of the situation, and that's what I think is the most likely and reasonable explanation of why doctors are leaving Alaska.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Jameson Smith.
Madam Chair and the rest of the committee, I'd like to speak to patient experience a little bit. As a patient at a clinic here, the Advanced Medical Clinic here in Fairbanks, Dr. Slaninski is my doctor. I experienced a back injury a couple of years ago, and I am on my third trip to Anchorage for treatment for things that I would have thought each time that it could have been done here in Fairbanks. And the trip is both expensive for me and also very painful and difficult. And you know, both the trip itself and the stay there is very inconvenient, painful, and expensive. So anything that you can do to reduce that cost, both in expense and difficulty for the patient, would be greatly appreciated. Also, I'd like to speak to the imaging centers here in town. My experience there has been extremely positive, being able to walk in and get the procedure done that I needed done in a timely fashion without having to wait or having scheduling nightmares that I have experienced in the larger hospital here. But to just be able to schedule over the phone and simply walk in and get done and get into a more comfortable place. Speaking from the patient experience, these clinics are doing a great job and they're very helpful. So anything I think that you can do to encourage them would be very helpful to the patient. And that's all I have for you. Thank you for listening.
Yeah, thank you. I have a question for you, Jameson. So you couldn't get whatever you had, whatever your problem was. They don't provide it at all in Fairbanks, or your doctor just isn't affiliated with the hospital?
Both, actually. One procedure, we don't have a doctor here to do it, and the other two, my doctor had to schedule it elsewhere, although it could have possibly been done here.
But do you know that for sure?
I believe that to be the case. I couldn't speak to it positively. I haven't checked with every doctor in town. But.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Arthur Manning. Is he young? Urban. Okay, we'll just skip over him, and that's all that we have online, I think. Let's see. Is there anyone else online that still wants to testify?
Yes, Christine Palmer.
Okay, Christine, go ahead.
Yes, I had a surgery. I had to fly down to Anchorage, to Providence, to have an implant, and it was with the Advanced Pain Center of Alaska. And being a single parent, I had to find someone that could take care of my children, and had to have at least an extra day or two with the flying down, and then trying to fly back when you just had back surgery is very painful, and there's no one that can help you, you know, as far as getting on the plane, you know, to accommodate you with your pain, and then you have to have someone to go with you because you're on medication. if there was a, if they was, could be able to have the procedures in Fairbanks, it would save, a lot of stress on me as a patient or as any patient and the family that's going through that. And it would save on a lot of more expenses that the families themselves already are, is already high with just having the surgery itself. So I definitely think that having a procedure where they can do the surgery here in Fairbanks would help out a lot. It would help Fairbanks itself.
I agree with you. All the people in my town feel that same way. Thank you very much. Is there anyone else online that would like to make any more comments? All right, then I'm going to close the online testimony, and then we will start here in the room. And Paul Fuse? And we're going to stick to the same 3 minute.
Thank you. I will. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I wanted to address the issue of House Bill 345 and the reason why we participated in negotiations sponsored by the governor and really coming out of this committee hearings last year where you encouraged us to try to figure out some of these problems. It's the lack of definitions. We passed the bill, House Bill 511, but did not define the terms. So that's what this bill does. And the problem is that physicians are exempt from CON. But you said individual independent diagnostic testing facilities were covered, but there was no definition of those. So here's how it went. Dr. Bridges is a radiologist physician classified by that under Medicaid. So he went to Fairbanks and he opened an office there as a physician's office. There was an appeal filed against it. The commissioner ruled that, yes, it was a physician's office. Well, in the meantime, after that, another facility went in and opened in Mat-Su, and they asked the commissioner, do we have to get a CON? And they said, no, you're a physician's office, too, and so you can open there. Then after that, another party in Fairbanks filed a lawsuit and said, no, your AOIC is an IDTF. And the judge ruled, well, you know, there's no...
Paul, can you tell us what those initials mean?
IDTF, Independent Diagnostic okay. Testing Facility. And that was what was in House Bill 511. And so then she said, well, I have no idea what the legislature meant because there's no definition, but it must have meant just if you had equipment in the office. So then that facility was ordered to be shut down in Fairbanks. Well, then Juno Bowen in Fairbanks, which is 100% owned by a physician, came and said, I want to open one even though I'm not a radiologist. And the commissioner said, well, yes, you're a physician's office, and there's an exemption for a physician's office, so you go ahead and open. So what happened after that, then up in Fairbanks, Dr. Bridges took over 100% ownership of the facility and reopened Fairbanks as 100% physician's office. Well, then an appeal was filed against the Mat-Su facility to saying, well, you're like AOIC used to be, and you're an independent diagnostic testing facility, but they had two letters from the commissioner saying that they weren't. So that's where we are right now. That is the reason for House Bill 345. The legislature passed a law but had no definitions. AOIC has always been for eliminating CON in the major medical markets of Alaska. And if that were to happen, then all our problems would go away. If that's not going to happen, it's only responsible that the legislature that passed the law would define the terms. The commissioner, it's put her in a no-win situation. She can't make a decision one way or the other without being sued. So I guess that's our plea to you that, you know, no matter what else you do, you define these terms, and, you know, we've negotiated this out, and it's a reasonable compromise.
Okay, thank you. Representative Gardner.
Thank you very much. That is the best explanation I've heard of this whole issue, and I just find it endlessly interesting that almost without exception, there are one or two exceptions, everybody who's talking about this issue is from Fairbanks. So I appreciate your thing. It doesn't
address in any way the underlying issue about certificate of need. And there, that's kind of a side and larger debate about whether the entire policy should be dismantled. But thank you.
Yes, and I think you're correct about that. And I've heard some of the committee members talk about a study, and, you know, you're hearing a lot of conflicting testimony. But what is untenable is to have a law in the books without definitions where nobody knows what it means.
Thank you, Paul.
Thank you.
Representative Roses.
Thank you, Paul. Did you participate in the Certificate of Need Negotiated Regulations Committee?
I attended those. Lobbyists were not allowed to participate, so I attended them, but I did not participate. But I was involved in everything leading up to them, and we were one of the early ones that requested that this happen and signed on early and said we would participate, yes.
May I follow up?
Follow up, Representative Roses.
As an observer, obviously a biased observer, since you're representing a particular group, did you feel that the process that vetted itself, and once the ground rules were established, did you feel that the process was one that allowed for equal representation for all parties participating?
Representative Roses, through the chair, no, it wasn't equal representation. There were 9 hospitals, there was 1 imaging center, and then there were several other physicians' offices. And the reason why we agreed to go into that is that negotiated rulemaking is a very special administrative process. People are brought together when there's been a long battle and it looks like there's enough pain on all sides to try to find a solution. And if an administrator does it, and we'll move forward for it, if 100% of the people agree to the solution. So that's even though why my clients were nervous about going into that outnumbered situation. I said, don't worry about it. If we don't agree, that's not going forward. And that's what happened. I guess there was about 70% agreement. The thing we couldn't agree to is going to 100% physician ownership. AOIC was formed by radiology physicians, nurses, technicians, and it's not even quite 50% physician-owned, and some people that helped build this company are going to have to give up their ownership to meet that 50% requirement that's in 345. But they're willing to do that in the spirit of compromise to try to solve this.
And for the record, you keep saying we. Who is we?
Alaska Open Imaging Center.
Okay.
Yes.
And Madam Chair.
Representative Gardner.
I made this point once before, and I'll make it again. The rulemaking group didn't include.
Did not achieve 100% agreement.
Right, but it didn't include consumers. This is all providers. And I just make this point because when we talk about CON policy, I think it's we must also safeguard the best interests of Alaskan consumers, and that's where I, for one, am stalled. But thank you.
Representative Gardner, through the chair, that's really true, like on a health care commission, it's being, you know, contemplated by this group, but negotiated rulemaking is really the very direct providers and participants. It's used to pull together people on a like a discharge permit by DEC or things like that. It's really not a general public task force. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of a specialized animal. You very seldom see it.
Thank you.
Oh, Representative Roses.
Thank you. Because I want to pursue this just a little bit more, because I've been very vocal about the fact that you don't give a group a job to do, and then after they spend the time doing the job, then you totally ignore it. So I want to pursue this just a little bit further. So even though the group that you represent was only 1 seat at the table, you're still comfortable with the conclusions that this group arrived at in terms of how they tried to reach conclusions in terms of the CON?
Representative Roses, through the chair, yes, in terms of the process. And the only difference was that the difference between 100% and 50%. And, you know, like I said, this is a homegrown Alaskan company made up of a variety of different type of professionals, not just physicians, that made up the group. And 100% requirement would be devastating to AOIC. So, you know, what you're seeing there as an issue is another dispute that's happening somewhere else. Someone is trying to achieve something by that. But we'd be a drive-by shooting in that. That's as close as I can say it.
You follow up?
Not so much a question as a comment, but I can tell you this discussion has gone on for years, even before I got elected. But I can tell you from the day I got elected, this individual's been in my office several times about CON. There are other lobbyists that are out here have been in my office about CON. One would follow the other, and I'd get 180 degrees out from each other. There wasn't one single thing that they agreed on except CON was certificate of need. They didn't agree about anything else. But what is interesting is since this committee has met, not only has this individual come into my office, but the person that had the exact opposite point of view, they came in together. And so if that isn't what compromise is, I don't know what it is. And so I appreciate the work that you've done, and I understand the presentations everybody's giving here, but I'm just having a real hard time getting my mind past the fact that we gave you a responsibility and you guys followed through on that responsibility. I just really have a tough time sweeping all that under the rug and ignoring it. So I, want to thank those that participated and appreciate you bringing something forward, but we've got a decision to make, and so we
appreciate it. My mother always said, blessed are the peacemakers.
Paul, I have a question for
you.
Yes,
ma'am.
you mentioned that under normal situations, when this type of a group gets together, that you don't count it unless there's 100% agreement?
That's correct, for a negotiated rulemaking.
So
now, for a task force like was held with the larger group, then you just kind of get a general recommendation, and you've seen those also.
Yeah. So I'm just trying to figure out, too, why maybe it was because you didn't come to a 100% agreement, that was kind of not looked at as quite as hard. I don't know. I hadn't heard that before, that it had to be 100% under normal circumstances.
Chairman Wilson, it does, and that's why I believe, although the commissioner hasn't told me this, why she didn't go through with it. And, you know, everything was agreed to except for the 50 and the 100%. I think that's what I could say. That was the one sticking point, and there were a couple side agendas there, and that's why that didn't go through.
Okay, thank you. And for the record, I do also want to mention that Representative Kurt Olson has been in the audience for a long time, and I'm sorry, I had it in front of me, and I kept forgetting it, and so I apologize for that. And, Kurt, if you'd like to come up and join us, you're welcome to. Okay, thank you. All right, next is Jeannie Hinman.
Hi, Madam Chair. My name is Jeanine Hinman. I'm the Director of Regulatory and Government Affairs for Advanced Medical Centers of Alaska, and I want to thank you for your time. There are four reasons why we support the Governor's Bill, House Bill 337. We've given you a lot of data, as have other people. I would ask that you carefully look.
Jeanine, you know what? Just lean back just a little bit, yeah.
We believe that our data demonstrates that repealing the CON will increase the access to medical care in this state, will increase the quality of it, will lead to better physician recruitment, and that it will not actually raise the cost, but that repealing the CON laws in this state will actually lower the cost. I'd ask that you carefully review the data that we submitted, all the data that you've been submitted by all the various interested parties. Look at the sources that we're using, including the Department of Justice and the FTC, which are the agencies that are tasked with monitoring antitrust violations in this country. That is the comment I believe Representative Fairclough was referring to earlier, Madam Chair. I'd also like to mention and echo a comment made earlier about the gas line employees that are expected to move into the Alaskan area, to the state of Alaska. In addition to that, the United States Army has predicted that we'll have more amputees and burn survivors from this war than from any other, probably because more survive now than did in prior wars. I'm a former JAG officer, and I served at Brooke Army Medical Center, which has the world's largest burn unit, and I feel like I'm very familiar with the complexity of their pain syndromes and what kind of treatment they require, which is very comprehensive, which is something Advanced Medical Centers does provide. Right now, if one of those veterans is going to the Fairbanks area or any area that doesn't, that has restrictive policies like Fairbanks Memorial Hospital has had with our providers, and if I could just take one moment and answer a question that you asked earlier about Fairbanks Memorial, they refused to credential our pain providers until we were in litigation that they initiated. When they finally withdrew the clause and said, okay, fine, we'll allow them to practice here, they still haven't credential those providers who filed their credential applications years ago. Maybe they got lost. I don't know. But they have not credentialed our providers. The applications were submitted, and it was disingenuous at best for him to raise that. Back to my point about the Army. Right now we have a former POW from the Vietnam War who was hung by the neck but survived. He has head and neck injuries. He has to travel to Anchorage to get the procedures that we can provide, that we could have provided in Fairbanks, if either A, they let us use their OR, or B, had not sued us to prevent us opening our own, or C, if they provided the services themselves, which they don't. It's really an outrage to have our veterans or any Alaskan treated that way. If it's good enough for them to have our guys have to travel by airplane or by car or crawl down, however they have to get, we can do better. We support the governor's bill for that reason. I'd also like to mention that within the healthcare systems that Providence and Fairbanks Memorial exist, they are the most profitable. According to the CON application of 2007, of Fairbanks Memorial Hospital reported a medical loss ratio of 1.38, which translates to a profit margin of 38%, which is pretty darn good. And within their healthcare system of Banner Health Systems, it is the single most profitable, the ones that are in Alaska.
Okay, thank you very much. Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was wondering, are you the organization that provided this document prepared statement of the Federal Trade Commission to us?
No, ma'am.
I came from the administration. Thank you.
Thanks for your time. Dr. Leonard Sisk.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I am Dr. Leonard Sisk, and I am the medical director and one of the physician owners of the Physician Offices of Imaging Associates of Providence, or IAP. IAP is a physician's office, and the physician owners are radiologists. The practice meets the federal government's CMS guidelines for physician's office, in which 50% hospital ownership of a physician's practice is allowed. The IAP physicians also provide radiology professional services to Providence Alaska Medical Center. Because of our close relationship with the hospital, it was chosen to be an investor in IAP, and the hospital owns half of our practice. I'd like to voice our support for House Bill 345. Item 3 of that bill requires a minimum 50% physician ownership before exempting the physician's office from the state's CON process. This is concordant with the previous determinations of the Department of Health and Social Services regarding the office of IAP prior to our opening. The bill also requires that physician owners interpret images in the facility, protecting Alaska's patients from physicians owning imaging equipment and producing images that they are not trained to interpret. Radiology requires access to very expensive machinery, MRI, CT. A radiologist physician office cannot function without access to these tools, no more than a carpenter can without access to a hammer. The fact that the scanners are so expensive, in the case of IAP offices totaling several million dollars, makes it reasonable that not all of the expense be paid by a group's physicians, as recognized by the federal government, which allows partnering with a hospital for a radiologist physician office. Because of the long-standing relationship between radiologists and hospitals, they're natural partners in this type of joint venture, and this partnering provides physician office access to sophisticated information technology systems benefiting patients by providing ready communication of information and images between facilities. The most vocal opponent of this exemption is the representative of the country's largest publicly traded hospital corporation, and it is understandable why they'd like to limit their competition. Their corporate shareholders would love to have the state provide on them a virtual monopoly as providers of these imaging scans. This does not benefit the state or the patients of the state. Provision 1 of the bill protects the facilities in smaller communities of Alaska. Competition skimming off revenues produced by imaging procedures could jeopardize the continued existence of these critical facilities. facilities in boroughs with 60,000 or greater population do not need this type of protection from competition in the imaging arena. And that basically concludes what I have to say in support of that Bill 345. And getting back to the question about the cost of providing services, charges is what he was quoting. I don't know where he gets them. I don't have access to any of my competitors' charges. But for purposes of the state, for purposes of Medicaid, which is actually the major component of state spending for imaging services, all imaging procedures are set. The payment made by Medicare is set by Medicaid. It doesn't matter who provides the scan, and it doesn't matter what you charge. The cost to the state is exactly the same. Now, for private payers, that's not always exactly the case, but each of them also have arranged various payments to physicians and to physician offices that differ considerably from charges. So quoting charges is actually a very inaccurate method of comparing cost to the consumer or cost to the state.
Well, I know for myself, many times when I get medical services, when my insurance comes back, my insurance company says, oh, they charged more than the going rate, and so we're only going to pay this much. So I know there's a lot of places that charge a lot more than what the going rate is. And that is a concern for me, because we as a committee really have to look at to me, it's kind of a fight going on right now between the hospitals and the imaging centers and the surgery centers and all that. But nobody is really figuring out here what that means to the patient, and that's where we have to look at this as a committee, because that's kind of our charge. And so it's a little bit difficult for us to figure this out when it's. It's very confusing, because people that came back last year and told us one thing are coming back and telling us something totally different this year, and it's a very interesting saga, I must say. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dr. Bob Urata.
Thank you for letting me speak. I'm Bob Urata, family physician, born and raised in Wrangell, Alaska, and have lived and practiced family medicine in Juneau since 1984. I'm testifying as a member of the board of directors of Bartlett Regional Hospital, which I have been serving on since 1994. And I speak in favor of House Bill 345 and House Bill 337, except for the provisions that eliminate CON. Eliminating CON in small markets such as Juneau will be detrimental to its citizens. Although elimination of CON will increase competition, it will do so only in services that are profitable and only for those with the best health care coverage. Those with no insurance, and now we are even seeing those with Medicare, will need to go to community hospitals that has traditionally been the safety net for the community. These highly specialized clinics, such as imaging or surgical clinics, will cherry-pick the highest-paying patient and cause serious financial injury to the community hospital, and thus cripple the safety net of the community. If there is a natural disaster, strong community hospitals are a major part of a successful rescue response team. CON is a public process that aids in the community health care planning. By preventing excess capacity in small markets, healthcare dollars are used wisely and efficiently. Excess capacity will reduce quality, particularly in surgery, where doing a certain number of cases is required to maintain good outcomes. For example, if there are two cardiac surgical centers and they're not busy enough, both heart surgery teams would be inefficient. Now, this was shown in a study of coronary artery bypass graft mortality, which was lower, about 20% lower in states with CON than states without CON. This was done on Medicare beneficiaries 1994 through 1999, and was published, it was a study done by University of Iowa College of Medicine in Iowa City, and that study was published in 2002. Another point. Costs of health care per person were 33 to 160% lower in states with CON than in those without, in a study by the big three American auto companies. For example, Ford Motor Company found that inpatient and outpatient MRI and coronary artery bypass surgery charges were 10 to 39% cheaper in states with CON and those without. And this was published by the American Health Planning Association in 2003. CON and community health care planning protects the consumer by assuring public input, maintaining accessibility to health care, maintaining high quality, and helps to contain costs. Consequences of unrestricted healthcare competition in small markets are splintering a provider delivery network, threatening of the viability of safety net facilities, and generally healthcare costs in this arena where supply drives demand. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was wondering if you could shed some perspective on the idea that the Certificate of Need program is actually slowing recruitment and limiting retention of doctors in Alaska. I've heard that from several sources, and
I, through the chair, I have not seen that, and I'm not sure how that works out theoretically. So I have not seen any data that supports that.
Thank you very much. Ryan Smith.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Ryan Smith. I'm the CEO at Central Peninsula Hospital in Soldotna, Alaska. I was a member of the CON Negotiated Rule Regulation Making Committee, and I have already testified in opposition to House Bill 337, so I won't reiterate my points there. I am in support of House Bill 345, as it does support the recommendations of our Negotiated Regulation Making Committee. I think it does act to reduce the amount of litigation that we've seen, and I think to Representative Seaton's point, the reason that surgery centers aren't represented in that language is, to my knowledge, they haven't tried to use the physician office exemption to operate, and so that's why they're not addressed in there. But I think that what we've done with House Bill 345, the language in there, will help to reduce the litigation, which was one of the goals of the commission. To speak a little bit to the physician recruitment in Soldotna, I've worked there for 2 years as the CEO and for a few months as the CFO, and we have successfully recruited an anesthesiologist from Anchorage, a general surgeon from Virginia, a urologist from Washington, and a family practice physician from Tennessee, and so it really hasn't impacted, being a CON state, our ability to successfully recruit physicians to our area. I have worked in 9 hospitals in 4 states. 2 of those were CON states and 2 of them were non-CON states. And I don't want to participate in any fear-mongering, but I do believe that healthcare and our hospital's participation in community benefits will change if CON is repealed. And so I am in support of the CON process. One other point that I would like to make that I heard talked about earlier was I think our third vote in the Negotiated Regulation Committee, or somewhere thereabouts, was what would consensus be among the group, and I think we voted that anything greater than 66%, is either 66 or 70% would be consensus. So we voted on what consensus would be, and then as we went through the items, that's how it played out. So I just wanted to make that point, and I think we did reach that majority consensus on most of the issues, and at the very end, I think with 85% consensus vote said that we believed in what we did in that process. So I appreciate the opportunity to testify.
Okay, thank you very much. Representative Roses.
I was just curious, when you did your recruitment, was it during the winter or was it during king salmon season?
Both. I have pictures to prove it.
All right. Oh, you know, give me that. Joel Gilbertson.
Madam Madam Chair, members of the committee, good afternoon. For the record, my name is Joel Gilbertson, representing Providence Health and Services in Alaska. I've already testified to the other two portions of the bill, not to the certificate of need portions, and I'll keep my comments brief because there's already been a lot of testimony. If I could say just one thing, which is that we've got a lot of big issues out there in healthcare, and a lot of them are surfacing through this certificate of need dialogue. Our healthcare system's broken. It's broken at the national level. It's broken at the statewide level. Healthcare cost is continuing to escalate, and the ability of delivering quality care is going to be threatened over time unless we address healthcare reform in this state. And that's why we've supported the commission. But I think to try to solve all of these problems through certificate of need is probably too great of a task. But we do need to resolve some of these issues before we probably can tackle the real question of how do we handle certificate of need in our state. There's a simpler question in front of us, which is what are we going to do about the conflict that's in our state right now around House Bill 511 and the fact that there were not definitions in that bill for the terms of a physician office versus an independent diagnostic testing facility for the purposes of imaging. And while there is a larger debate, I wanted to testify in our support for moving Representative Kelly's bill, House Bill 345, which was an effort with a lot of compromise. And I did participate in that rulemaking committee that the commissioner created. A lot of compromise to try and resolve how are we going to navigate the waters and resolve some of the conflict. A bill was passed. It put independent diagnostic testing facilities under certificate of need. It kept physician offices as it pertains to imaging equipment outside of certificate of need. And it never defined what percent ownership makes it a physician office. There are people who are at 100% and people who are at zero. But there is a reasonable compromise in front of you now in House Bill 345 to at least resolve a question that is causing a lot of confusion in the community. It's causing conflict in our courts, in our administrative hearings process, and to some extent it will allow our commissioner to focus on how we address health care reform in our state. And so moving a reasonable compromise on defining a physician office versus IDTF as it pertains to imaging allows us to probably get on to the bigger question, which is how are we going to address health care reform in this state. And with that, Madam Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions or I'll
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Joel, one of the questions that has come up that I asked earlier was about this compromise that has come forward will work on settling the majority of the suits because they're around imaging, and then there's another group that are on outpatient or ambulatory surgery centers. And I don't see that addressed in here, and I hate to go through this process and then come back again next year and try and go through the process again. And I'm trying to figure out why we don't have the same kind of solution offered for the ambulatory surgery centers at the same time we are looking at this bill in 345.
Yeah. Responding to the chair, it's actually a simple answer, but it's somewhat complex. The simple answer is that an ambulatory surgery center cannot be a physician office. So to create a standard to separate between a physician office and an ambulatory surgery center is unnecessary. An ASC is a clearly defined licensed facility and has a clear definition both at the federal and the state level. And so trying to navigate between the issue of what is a physician office and what is an ambulatory surgery center, that's already been settled. What has not been settled is the question of, for the purposes of a physician and a physician's office that purchases imaging equipment, are they a physician office or are they an independent diagnostic testing facility? And that has no definition. It has no definition at all because we don't license physician offices. And this bill, House Bill 345, will, in the very narrow question of imaging equipment, resolve how the state will navigate the question of what is and what is not under certificate of need. Under ambulatory surgery center, that definition has already been established.
Okay.
Follow-up, Representative Seaton.
Thank you. And the other question that has been coming up is it's overall more policy on and recruitment and retention of doctors in Alaska. Now, I understand that, you know, a hospital can still recruit, but do you feel or do you have any experience that doctors that are not affiliated strictly with the hospital are not coming to Alaska because that's their only option?
We haven't experienced that. I don't think we're experiencing that in the Anchorage marketplace. Physician recruiting is tough, and getting physicians to Alaska is very difficult. Largely, we don't have a medical school. We don't have residency programs outside of primary care, and the vast majority of physicians practice within 30 miles of where they did their residency. That's the challenge in front of us, and that's what we have to solve. We're also seeing physicians who are coming out of medical school right now, they want to be employed. You didn't hear that 10 years ago. But they want to be employed. They want to be able to have vacation. They want a predictable schedule. They don't want to have to worry about call. And so if you look across the country, a growing percentage, in fact, a very large percentage, almost a majority now, of physicians coming out of medical school want to move into health systems where they can be employed. And that's just a change that's happening. That wasn't happening 10 years ago. And so the market's always changing. I don't think certificate of need is a legitimate excuse for the problem we have in recruiting physicians to Alaska. We've got a challenge recruiting physicians to Alaska. Physicians are exempted from certificate of need in the statute. Their offices are exempted from certificate of need. There are some red herrings out there, but there's some legitimate challenges, and I think we can focus on some of them instead of pursuing some red herrings that are out there.
Hey, Representative Keller.
Joel, the hospital would naturally have good information about how many, how hard it is, how difficult it is to recruit doctors to work in a hospital. But do you have any information regarding how many doctors may not come because they cannot open their own ambulatory center? I don't hear. I mean, I can understand your answer, but it's just narrowly for the hospital, right?
Respond to the chair, Representative Keller. I think it's important probably just to share a piece of information, which is the overwhelming majority of physicians that we recruit and we support recruiting to the marketplace don't work for the hospital. In fact, overwhelmingly, the physicians that are recruited by hospitals are recruited to be community physicians. And there are careful carve-outs under federal law that allow hospitals to support financially the recruitment of community physicians without creating implications that it's violating Stark Law, for example, at the federal level. And so hospitals work with local practices that are looking to grow, works with providers in the community that are looking to, or physicians who want to come and open a shop. Hospitals financially and logistically support recruiting physicians. Providence works in an annual year. We try to recruit 30 to 40 physicians into the Anchorage marketplace. Very few of them are coming to work for the hospital. And there are a broad spectrum of specialties. I can tell you based on Providence being the largest healthcare provider in the state, we're probably recruiting the largest number of physicians in the state. I've never heard from the physicians we are trying to recruit to come into the community and be private shingle-hanging physicians, that certificate of need is the barrier. We haven't heard that. We have heard, you're pretty far away from my family. My wife doesn't want to move there. We've heard various reasons, but I've never heard we're concerned about certificate of need.
Thank you.
Okay, Representative Roses.
Thank you. Joel, in reading the report that came out of the negotiated committee, mm-hmm. One of the comments here, it said, should CON processes and definitions be in alignment with Medicare? And 80% of them said yes. Can you expand on that a little bit, how they're out of sync?
Was that 80% said yes? Yeah. This gets to defining. At the federal level, there's been an effort through CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which runs healthcare programs that are federally sponsored. They've navigated the waters and defined what is and what is not an IDTF or a physician office, because you have to. They're two different animals. They're paid differently and reimbursed differently. The state hasn't. At the federal level, they have made this definition choice, and in the federal definition, it does not require 100% physician ownership to be a physician office. In fact, it explicitly says that it could be owned by a physician in a hospital, or a hospital. Acknowledging that many are medical groups in other states are actually owned by health systems. They run primary care clinics, for example. Very common. So at the federal level, they have defined this, they have navigated these waters, and they've found that there is a need for physicians to partner with others. So I think the group, in my sense, the group was acknowledging that we needed to get this test resolved in Alaska, and it acknowledged that physicians can have partners. in running their private medical practices.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Rod Beatty.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, I'm back. We already covered, of course, the commission and the data reporting piece, but did want to go on record that the Alaska Hospital and Nursing Home Association is still opposed to the part of the bill, 337, that deals with repeal of certificate of need. And you have several things in the packet that I presented last time that speak to that, as far as our reasons for that, as well as some documents. The community benefit report, the first one ever generated for Alaska, that gives you a sense of the kind of burden that hospitals have in terms of covering the uncompensated portion of Medicare, Medicaid, and people who can't afford to pay. And then there's an analysis piece which dealt with the Department of Justice report and gave you another perspective on that presentation that was made by the person from Justice Department. And hopefully you had a chance to look at that, but it isn't a foregone conclusion that the Department of Justice report actually can make the case for some of the arguments that were presented in that paper. The community benefits report is important for a couple of reasons, I think. It will let you see the size of the dollar amount that hospitals are carrying that others don't have to carry in order to keep the healthcare system afloat in Alaska. It gives you a sense of the kind of gap that we think the commission can be helpful in figuring out how to close before taking certificate of need out of the system and not giving hospitals some opportunity to be able to, you know, make up that difference and to have more of a level playing field in terms of how the system operates. So as that report will get better over time, this was just the first cut of it. There's $150 million that you'll see in that report spread across the state. We have that information regionally as well if you're interested in it. The commission is going to have another important tool, I think, for you to look at in terms of trying to cut through who's telling you what accurately in terms of whether increased choice will lead to lower costs. And that's the reporting piece of it. We're already reporting our prices through a variety of information, inpatient and outpatient, to the department. But if you actually had prices in front of you from all the other parties that we recommend be included in the reporting module, then you could see for yourself whether those others outside of hospitals are actually charging less for the same apples-to-apples comparison for the procedures that the consumer is looking for. We have information about that in some of our communities, and we think that when that actually comes before you in a way that you would see is accurate and can't be challenged, that you'll come to the same conclusion, that it's not going to lead to that result. But again, I think having that information is exactly what some of you have been asking for, so that you can really understand where this might ultimately go. On House Bill 345, you've had some great testimony, and I won't go back over it, but I do think it closes the gap on the problem that you've been facing and hearing about the last 4 years in terms of the imaging area, and it was not hard. I mean, it was hard to get to that point in time, and there's some disagreement still around that. But my board voted again today to support that proposal that's in front of you, and that we think that's the best place to go at this point in time. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Don't see any questions, so thank you. You will all be glad to know I'm down to my last sheet of paper. Norman Stevens.
Madam Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to talk. I was also part of the negotiated rulemaking committee. I was very disappointed to find out that all the work kind of went out the window.
You need to state your affiliation for the record.
Yeah, sorry. Norman Stevens, I'm the CEO of Matsu Regional Medical Center up in Palmer, Wasilla. And I've been there for about going on 4 years now. Just a couple of points that I wanted to kind of clear up a little bit. One, And Paul did a really good job. He's a great speaker and did a great job testifying. But it really wasn't nine hospital CEOs represented. I think it was six of us, actually. And the balance of that committee was fairly representative of the people who were having this dispute. I think that it's important to say that we had about a third of hospitals, third or so, excuse me, of imaging center folks, and the balance were surgery centers and whatnot. So it was an interesting dynamic. We got in the room, and it was, you know, first off, there was a lot of these lawsuits where the people in the room, yours truly included, and so it was a bit of a tension the first day or two, but after we worked through the process, I think that committee was effective. I do think, though, that the 66% consensus is probably not a very good idea, because 66% still leaves 34% who didn't get what they want, and we're back here again. And I think that'll always be that way to some degree. You know, and I don't have a lot more to offer. I did testify earlier on 337, and I do believe that the CON will reduce costs, and that's another point. I am sort of the odd man out, too, on our on the association. I do think that a lot of what's happened here, and I liked your comments, sir, about you know, what's to stop this from being imaging centers today and then being surgery centers tomorrow. And I think it's a slippery slope, because if we set a precedent this way, you know, the next thing we're going to hear about is a bunch of surgeons who get the idea of, you know, well, we'll work on some method of trying to get our way too. And I think that the public interest, if you go back to CON, the basic premise of it, if it is to, you know, cut costs in healthcare, I think that's really the biggest thing you've got to sort out. And I don't envy you, because at some point, after listening to all the different people, I'm beginning to get confused myself sometimes. But as far as what I was going to say about the rest of the hospitals, I think one of the problems I've had, as everybody's pretty aware of, there's a dispute between us and another competing health system that's developed an imaging center in our, literally in our front yard across the parking lot from us, that didn't get a CON in the process based off their interpretation that it was really a physician office, not an imaging center, and therefore they could take advantage of the exemption for physicians to not have to go through the process of getting a CON. And predictably, we howled loudly about that and have been all along, and feel like it's unfair, and it was using that provision for physicians as a loophole to use their ability as a competing health system to come in and really expand in our area. And we built a $101 million hospital. We followed the rules, the CON rules. I assume that's my beeper for 10 seconds. I'll quit here quick. But we did go through the process. We worked through the CON. We established community need. We followed the rules, and we built a brand-new hospital for the Matsu Valley. And now we are being damaged every day by imaging center that did not, in our opinion, follow these rules. And I understand.
And your time is up.
My time is up, and thank you very much. I pretty much said everything I had to say.
Okay, thank you. And I guess I forgot someone at the bottom. I checked it off, so I don't know how I did that. But do you, any questions? Guess not.
Okay, thank you.
Richard Cobden?
Correct. Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'm Richard Cobden. I'm a practicing orthopedist in Fairbanks, and I wanted to speak in favor of 337. And I wanted to answer four of the questions that were raised by panel members during the course of the testimony, if I could, but I don't want to do it, take up my other time, but I'll get to it, particularly recruitment, because that's a very, very near and dear subject to me. I'm currently an orthopedic surgeon practicing in Fairbanks. I'm also chief of staff of the medical staff at Fairbanks Memorial Hospital. And I do work with Representatives Kawasaki, who also works at Fairbanks Memorial, and with Representative Kelly, who is the vice chairman of the foundation at Fairbanks Memorial. And I was quite frankly surprised when I saw 345 come up, because Mr. Kawasaki had represented it as being something in which everyone agreed. But the rest of the physicians, including about 90% of those who are surgeons and who are interested in seeing the CON gone away with, had not heard of this, and we did not join in the consensus. The question was asked earlier by Representative Gardner, and it's a very good question. How come this thing came about, and why is this one okay, but the Ambulatory Surgery Center not okay? We characterize it as a clever little bit of mischief, because what it does is simply exempt the diagnostic imaging centers of which there are already several in existence, so they're really not impacted. And we felt that it was a divide and conquer theory, that we get those physicians who are so active in trying to get this certificate of need over with on the diagnostic imaging out of the way, then there'll be less impact on 337. We do not support 345. It is not a compromise bill. The second thing that came up was on the concept of recruitment. Recruitment is something that we have been doing for 15 years in Fairbanks, and we're fighting a losing battle. We cannot get physicians to come. And part of it is due to the CON restrictions, and part of it due to the fact that we're just not the most attractive place in the world. Right now, we're trying our best at the hospital, and I'm on a recruitment committee there, to get physicians to come in. In the last year and a half, we've lost six physicians up there who went to other communities where they could practice in an ambulatory surgery center. And it is a very big loss to our state and to our community in Fairbanks. We're now importing urologists and importing in general surgeons to work locum tenens because we're so desperately short. And it's very, very difficult. The original reason for CON was to control capital costs. We know it doesn't do that. No longer a good reason. The big item was number two, cost shifting. And cost shifting has often been cited as a reason to have the CON so that you can have charity and indigent care covered. The mischief in this is that we don't know how much the hospitals really need. I recommend this book by Neil Davis, just got published. He researched it very carefully, and he determined that in Fairbanks, 1.3 of all revenues at the hospital go to charity care. And there's good documentation for that. This is on revenues of $187 million a year. They have a profit, a stated profit of 12% per year. So essentially what they're saying is that 1.3% will be taken off or would not be added to the profit line. The difficulty with this is taxation without representation. Essentially what they do is they charge heavily for what we call the cherry-picking parts. And there is cherry-picking. It does go on, but it's all done by single providers like the FMH. Then they take those revenues and use them to pay for other areas that are not so well reimbursed. The difficulty with this is there's no limits, there's no oversight, there's no legislation, there's no rules. They can take this tax and use it any way they want. This authority really belongs here in the legislature. You guys should be doing the taxing, not the hospitals. The final thing is that we really, really feel that this idea of bringing new physicians to this state is difficult to do when the state prohibits capital investment in their own business. It doesn't allow it. And it's discouraging. I get offers all the time across the United States to come to Poughkeepsie, to come to Tallahassee, to come to Lincoln, Nebraska, with huge bonuses. Why should I come to Fairbanks, Alaska, which gives no bonuses? And it isn't the weather that attracted me here. So the concept is we're going to have very rich hospitals, extremely well equipped, the best in the nation, and I agree that that is the case, but no physicians. And how does a hospital, an empty building, treat patients? This is the best thing that we can do for our Alaskans. Pass 337, get rid of the CON, and if you have to address the issues that CON seems to be wagging the tail of the dog for, do them separately. Do them orderly.
Okay, and I need to cut you off. I gave you quite a bit of leeway there because you answered some questions. Representative Fairclough was first, and then Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to clarify, Richard, are you speaking on behalf of the hospital?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I am the chief of staff. I am the chief of staff, and I wanted to disclose that. I do oversee such things as the credentialing and the recruitment and the bringing in of new services. And I can speak to what Mr. Gould said earlier about the not having any applications for pain. It's simply
not true. Thank you, Madam Chair. I just, when you originally spoke, I recognized that you identified yourself as the chief of staff at Fairbanks Memorial, and I thought that you said, we do not support, actually, is what my quote has on HB 345. That's why I was quickly going back through my notes, because I have three employees that are opposing the repeal, of which you're in support of, and in support of 345. So I have your chief financial officer told us that, and then two separate employees told us that I have in my notes. So just wanted to clarify that you were speaking on your own behalf.
No, I'm not the chief over the chief financial officer. I'm the chief of the medical staff. It's a separate line and separate entities entirely.
I recognize that. I just was trying to find out who's speaking for the hospital.
Not me.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Gardner.
Thank you. I just wanted to ask you to hold that book up again for a second. I see the title.
It's called Mired in the Healthcare Morass, An Alaskan Takes on America's Dysfunctional Medical System by Neil Davis. And it's an excellent book. If you want good statistical background, line by line, everything's in here. This man did a tremendous job.
Okay. Madam Chair, I think I'll be very interested in that book.
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got a little confusion on the different ideas of recruitment and ambulatory surgery versus the imaging center. Is it 345 doesn't deal with ambulatory surgery centers? We had information that the ambulatory surgery centers wouldn't fit into this because they're separately regulated facilities, I believe was. Can you?
It's not a good reason for not including them. You could scratch out imaging centers in Mr. Kelly's bill, substitute ambulatory surgery centers, and people would be a lot more happy with the thing. That's a separate licensing issue once they're up and running, yes. But the bill 345 does not address any of those issues. Representative Gardner is correct. It's a straw man. It gets us diverted. We still got the overlying issues of CON hanging over our heads. And we got the lawsuits. And we have huge lawsuits. 9 lawsuits were generated out of 3 applications and awards last year alone. That's very expensive.
Follow up then.
Follow up, Representative Seaton.
So, in your opinion, then, ambulatory surgery centers could be added into 345, and that would take care of some of those problems?
It'd be a darn big help. Then we might achieve consensus.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. We have 2 more people left. Paul Morris. And I might, Mario?
Looks like Morris.
From Alaska Regional Hospital. And I can't read the... Oh, okay. John Bringhurst.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is John Bringhurst, and I'm not from Fairbanks. my address is P.O. Box 816, Petersburg, Alaska, and I'm the CEO of Petersburg Medical Center. I'd like to speak in favor of HB 345 as a reasonable compromise to doing away with the Certificate of Need legislation. I have not always been a supporter of Certificate of Need, but after 35 years of hospital administration, I've become convinced that it does have some benefits that far outweigh those costs. Intuitively, it would seem that open competition would lead to lower costs in healthcare. As you are probably becoming aware in this committee, the healthcare industry does not always follow intuitive logic. My own experience would confirm that, and I'd like to tell you just one example that may help illustrate that for your benefit. Before coming to Alaska, I was the administrator of 2 hospitals in a community of 28,000 people in southern Oregon. While still well short of our capacity in both surgeries in both hospitals, a group of our surgeons decided to put in their own surgery center. When we were unable to dissuade them from that, nor was the organized medical staff unable to dissuade them, we finally persuaded them that maybe we could joint venture that situation so that we could do it together. And as a joint venture partner, I do have information in terms of how that joint venture proceeded. I guess the thing that may be of interest to you is that the loss of surgical volume in the 2 hospitals that I managed, which were the only 2 hospitals in the community, was far less than the increase in surgical volume in our ambulatory surgery center. You may ask why that occurs, and I think we all have our own reasons, but I do believe that And perhaps this answers Senator Seaton's question a little bit in terms of why surgery centers, but basically I believe that when there is physician ownership in a physician self-referral setting, that there is a conflict of interest that's created that, that can lead to overutilization. Another factor, and this perhaps gets to a question that Representative Kelly mentioned earlier, but when doctors self-refer, they don't always have to compete on cost, and maybe that explains why some of the cost variances that or price variances that were discussed earlier. But I do believe that overutilization does lead to higher costs for a community, and I think that overall certificate of need does have a purpose. Our hospital wound up with a lower volume of service. Basically, we also wound up with a more difficult, difficulty cases, the ones that required more utilization of services and a longer time to recuperate. So we wound up with a lower volume of more complex cases, and obviously that leads to an increase of our rates. If I could respond to maybe two other questions that were raised earlier, one of them has to do with very rich hospitals. I can't speak for the hospital in Fairbanks, but I can tell you about a very small hospital in Petersburg, Alaska, that's well on its way to losing $900,000 this year on top of a $600,000 loss last year. So I don't know where those rich hospitals are, but I certainly wish they were in Petersburg. Someone also mentioned that CON excludes others who are willing to provide services. I don't believe that's exactly accurate. What CON does is it allows the community to have a choice in those services that are allowed into their communities as to whether those are needful and whether those services will actually lower cost or will create the situation that they're trying to create in that community. So thank you for the time.
I have a question for you because I believe you mentioned it to me earlier. What was the result? Did you say that the result of when the ambulatory surgery center was that there were more surgeries, but the population was the same?
Yeah, our population stayed the same, and I managed the only two hospitals in town, so I know what the surgery volume was. But the increase or the surgery volume for our ambulatory surgery center was way higher, almost from day one, than what we lost in the two hospitals. So it does create a situation where somehow surgeries were just created. And I think that's a situation of physician self-referral, and I think you have that situation, or at least the tendency to lead towards that in those situations where you do have physician self-referrals.
Wow. Representative Cisna?
Madam Chair, it may also, and you might speak to that, a similar situation occurs if you have insurance, suddenly you get more referrals. That happened to me when I became employed by the state, moving from being self-employed. I suddenly was getting lots of referrals for different kinds of imaging and that kind of thing because I had money suddenly.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you. I don't see any other questions.
Thank you very much.
And did Paul come back in the room?
He has not.
He has not. Okay. Well, then I'm going to close testimony. We're right on time.
Madam Chair, my name is Mike Powers.
And I don't think you were on our list.
I was not. And if you had a moment, I'd like to take 1 minute.
Okay, 1 minute we will give.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members of HESS, I'm Mike Powers, Administrator at Fairbanks Memorial Hospital. I've been there 22 years. I am extremely proud of what we have done over time, and it's related to the planning that Certificate of Need allows. We have a long track record of success. We've built the second largest long-term skilled nursing facility that was replaced, a very poorly run in 1994, and since that time we've brought a cancer center to the community, an outpatient surgery center to the community, an imaging center. We now have cardiac cath care, an electronic medical record. We have supported the nursing program at the university to bring nurses to our community and to all physician practices in town. And we are currently recruiting physicians for every single practice in town. We coordinate with 15 different medical groups in the community. We jointly plan when we can go out to conferences and make sure people understand availabilities of all practices in town. We have guaranteed incomes, which physicians can get on and then work off of very quickly so they're on their own. We relocate them to all practices. We have sign-on bonuses. We have spousal employment opportunities, and we outreach to the entire community. I am very proud of what has happened, and it's because there's logical planning related to the certificate of need process. Earlier this year, the state of Alaska, the Department of Health, authorized 8 additional ORs in our community, more than doubling the number of ORs, 258% increase. It would have terribly crippled the hospital. Ultimately, we appealed, and the state came back and said there should be 2, and Dr. Wade in Fairbanks received them. Others did not, who have testified here. It still is too many. It still takes away from the hospital. Nevertheless, the system worked. What you do need is more support for that Department of Health and Social Services and the planning function. That concludes my testimony. I'd be glad to answer any questions that you may have.
Any questions? So thank you very much. Thank you. Is there anyone else that I missed that's in the audience here? Okay. Seeing none, I'm going to close testimony on this bill, on these bills, both of them. And what we're going to do is we're going to proceed. Any of you that have amendments, we're going to be talking about this on our next Saturday meeting, which is Saturday, February 23rd, and at 9 o'clock in the morning. And we will, I'm sure, have all kinds of ideas to work on, and we do have some amendments already, an amendment already that I'm going to pass out just so that the members of the committee have a chance to look at it before the next meeting. And so if anyone does have an amendment, if you could get it to me ahead of time before the packets go out so that everybody can look at them and have time to review them. And who had questions? Representative Faircloth.
Madam Chair, I have an excused absence for that day. We have a town hall meeting as well as another event for Military and Veterans Affairs on Friday night, and then on Saturday night a town hall meeting and another event that night. So I am out of town. Are we planning on moving that bill on Saturday?
I think we'll get all the amendments and then get them into some kind of a committee substitute.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Yeah. All right. Did you have a question, Representative?
Madam Chair, I was just going to ask if you wanted our amendments ahead of time.
Yes. So. Yes. All right. Having said all of that, we will adjourn this meeting, and thank you all for coming.